heat check.
The first round of the draft is in the books, baby.
We got some immediate reactions. We'll check in with Bo Morgan with the Atlanta Hawks, Craig Hoffman with the Wizards, Brandon Scott with the Rockets for their immediate reaction to the first three picks in the draft. We'll then check in with Ian Begley from SNY about the Knicks and everything going on with the Mikal Bridges trade and the OG Anunoby big re-signing. And a very special bonus, we have coaching legend Jim Boeheim, the Hall of Fame coach from Syracuse, with his thoughts on the NBA draft at large. Whole lot to get into. Exciting stuff, Anthony. First round is in the books. You take DD Connect, baby. Drop that motherfucking beat. This should be Rihanna. All right, first round in the books. Let me say, I think nobody knew what was going to happen. We were all shooken. We thought it was going to be a bloodbath. In the beginning, it was unsurprising and unpredictable then at the same time. We had way fewer drafts than anybody thought. Some surprise picks, some puzzling draft picks, and some players who dropped and rose like the tides. The top 10, like this. Zachary Arishashi. For the Atlanta Hawks, because Alex Saar told him, I don't really want to work out for you because I don't think I'm a great fit because you guys want me as a center. Number two, Alex Saar goes to the Washington Wizards. Reed Shepard goes to the Houston Rockets. Wow. Stephon Castle becomes the San Antonio Spurs. Ron Holland, huge surprise to the Detroit Pistons. Way to hold firm, our man Trajan Langdon. Tijan Saloon to the Charlotte Hornets, thank God, because number seven, Donovan Klingon, falls all the way to my Portland Trailblazers. We didn't even have to move up for him. The Memphis Grizzlies were trying to move up to the top six and take Donovan Klingon, but guess what? No. They had to wait till nine to draft Zach Edey, a man that many people thought wasn't even going to be a first-round talent until like a month ago. Anyway, back to number eight, Rob Dillingham goes to the Spurs, but then gets traded immediately to the Minnesota Timberwolves when he begged to be a San Antonio Spurs, and they said, sure, we'll do you like Philadelphia did Mikal Bridges and then ship you out immediately. Zach Edey goes to the Grizzlies, like I said, in number 10. Cody, I'm getting by my last name, Williams, goes to the Jazz. Interesting. Very interesting top 10. It isn't the show where we break it all down, but instead I'm going to reach out to experts to help break down all this for the top of the draft. All five, count them, five interviews appeared on my other show, BetMGM Tonight, which airs on the radio Monday through Friday in most major markets and live on Twitch and YouTube and the Odyssey app. Also, before we get into that interview, because this is fucking holy shit moments, Portland traded the 14th pick and a boatload of first-round picks and Malcolm Brogdon for Denny Abdia, folks, so we get our wing and we get our center because he is better than any one of those little baby wings, better than Dalton Connect and younger, better than Cody Williams on every single day and twice on Sundays. So I have to mention that draft pick before we go to Bo Morgan, 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, who's here to help us understand why the Hawks decided to pass on Alex Saar and take a man who my man Frank Mason called a scrub. Yeah, former Kansas player said, nice guy, but don't know why he's the number one pick in the draft. The homie cannot play.
Bo Morgan jumps on with us now, co-host of The Morning Shift on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. This felt like the worst-kept secret, but then at the same time, we hear that the Hawks weren't actually really letting anybody know anything. So now that we know officially, Bo, it's Zachary Risache, number one overall. What does his fit and his rookie season look like in Atlanta to you?
Oh, boy, thanks for having me, first off. That's a tough question because we really don't know who exactly he's going to be playing with. And I think, honestly, if you look at everything about Risache, it's easy for me to say, I guess. We've had to learn his name a little bit in Atlanta. But if you look at what he's really good at, I think Trae Young would fit great with him. I also think, to then counter my own point, I think DeJounte Murray could play well with him. Problem is, I don't think either guy is going – I think one of those guys won't be here with him. I think one goes, and then it's Jalen Johnson, Risache, and maybe whoever they want to play point there. That being said, he's a pretty good guy as far as pull up from what I have been able to find out about him from research, because Alex Saar pretty much told us that he wasn't coming here when he didn't work out for Atlanta. That was pretty much a red flag. I thought, obviously, the big man from Connecticut was a possibility because Quinn Snyder was apparently in love with him. I like Reed Sheppard as well, but this is a guy that I think can, you know, he's really what Atlanta needs. And I can't tell you guys how many times I have sat there and listened to either, you know, when it was Nate McMillan or Quinn Snyder, just say, well, you know, the effort wasn't really there. We didn't have that. This is a guy that even when he went through a slump last season, he was able to contribute in other ways. And I think that's the kind of guy that can bring some momentum here. But he's going to pair with either Trae Young and DJ and Jalen Johnson. He's going to be one of those. That's going to be the big three. And, you know, I imagine Clint Capela will go away, and this guy's going to get a lot of time. This is not, I don't see this as being a guy that is going to sit at all next season and kind of, you know, get his feet under him like we've seen other guys, like Jalen Johnson, who basically we didn't see for over a year. And then A.J. Griffin we saw a little bit and disappeared. I think this guy is going to be an instant contributor. They're going to at least try to make him that.
You mentioned that Alex Saar didn't work out with the Hawks, and Landry Fields said, we've taken guys before that haven't worked out for us, so that's not going to deter us. In terms of what you hear, why did they prefer Rishi Shea over Saar? Was it simply just the lack of the workout?
I think a lot of it had to do with that, from kind of what, you know, you were told. What we were told is that Saar didn't want to work out for them. He didn't like the fit. He was the way, basically, he thought he didn't want to be moved inside, and that's kind of what they had, from what I was gathered, is that they kind of wanted to do with him. They wanted to move him inside and kind of be that big man in there, and that's not what he wanted. And with Rishi Shea, he's a risky guy for Atlanta to take. I mean, because they are going to need him to do the things that they want, and they're not doing that. But he's also got this huge high ceiling that I think they saw with him. And so, but really, I think a lot of it had to do with the workout with Saar. And this, like, this front office has been a lot of, they got a lot of heat on them. You know, I think you guys already know the way the DeJounte Murray trade went down, where Travis Schlink is in. You know, there's stories out there that he was like, I don't want to do this. I don't like this. This is too much. He's a great player, but this is way too much for that player. And then he suddenly moved out afterwards, and DeJounte Murray trade happens, and it hasn't worked out. I mean, we've had two seasons of just mediocre basketball, which is why you guys are talking to me at 8:25 Eastern time on draft night. And I think they needed a guy that could come in here and mesh and play immediately. I think that had a lot to do with it. I honestly do. And I think that you look at different boards, and he's the number one overall prospect. I don't know if that was moved because they wanted to get it right and say, well, look, our number one guy at the end of the day went number one overall, and that's why him and Saar kind of flip-flop. But I also think that it was a lot of people in our city that fell in love with Saar only because he was the first name mentioned when we won the draft lottery. The same people who did not know the draft lottery was happening on a Sunday afternoon on what, Mother's Day, but it did. And those people were like, well, we got to get him or we're screwing it up. And I think that in the end of the day, this franchise, the front office, they tried to go, and it sounds odd when I said, yes, he's a risky pick with a high ceiling, but they thought it was the safest pick because the last thing they needed was the egg on their face of bringing in a guy who basically had told you, I don't want to be here. Don't draft me.
All right. We really appreciate you jumping on real quick, Bo. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more going on with the Hawks this offseason. Thanks for jumping on.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Bo Morgan, 92.9 The Game.
Next up is Craig Hoffman of 980 The Game in Washington, D.C., who helps us make sense of the Wizards' number two pick, Alex Saar, also from Paris, France. Listen in.
Craig Hoffman's going to jump on with us now, host of The Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Craig, it's Alex Saar, number two overall. We kind of knew it was either going to be Rishi Shea. You don't have to say that name over and over again, so good for you. Or Alex Saar. It is Saar now. Just your reaction to that pick now that it's official.
All that Duolingo I did, and now my French pronunciations are just wasted on Alex Saar. I mean, come on. No, I think it's a great pick for the Wizards. It's great. Great's a relative term. Like, this draft is what it is. And, you know, it's interesting doing our draft show and doing my show today, and people will be like, well, how can you take a guy who is this raw offensively, has this many questions offensively, with the number two pick? And I'm like, okay, well, you tell me the guy in this draft that is, like, even if you told me, okay, I'll take all the defensive warts in the world, who's the offensive player in this draft that's a no-brainer? There isn't one. There's some guys who can shoot it, obviously, a guy like Shepard. There's some guys like Dillingham who have great reputations as creators and probably come in and are a boost offensively for sure, or more complete offensively from day one. But at the end of the day, like, Alex Saar is 7'1", can't teach that. He's super mobile at 7'1", can't teach that. You can improve guys' ball handling. You can improve their decision-making. You can improve their shooting. And in some of those areas, he's not as bad, I think, as some people want to think he is. So, I think the last part of it for the Wizards specifically is they're trying to build this positional size, defensive identity, and he fits in right with that, whether he's a 4 or a 5. When you're 7'1", you're big for every position. You add that to Koulibaly, and we'll see what else they do with the 14th pick they acquired for Abia.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about that. Another guy with positional size was Deni Abia. He was absolutely electric last year, took a huge jump on a very team-friendly deal that actually gets better, cheaper and cheaper as the time goes along. Wizards fans are in disarray on Reddit. What about you?
I understand this move far more than the average fan does, and I think you just have to look at it, Trista, as you well know. Like, these front offices are playing chess, not checkers. This isn't about this move. But even in the vacuum of this move, they got 2 firsts and 2 seconds for Deni Avdija. When did that become a bad move? Like, and I hate to say this for Wizards fans, but Deni Avdija is a dime a dozen in the NBA, a guy who on a good team averages 18-8 and plays good defense. And on a 15-win team last year, like, he was your second or third best player. And I understand the contract is ridiculous. And the fact that it's descending, I think, is actually interesting as a trade chip, because over time, not only does his value decrease because less time is left on the contract, but it actually becomes in some ways harder to trade him because you have to match the money. And if you want a big return, you have to then add more players to the deal because the money becomes less balanced over time. So in a way, if Deni Avdija ultimately is someone they see as a trade chip, he becomes less valuable over time. You look at the production he had last year and you just sell high. He's not going to have any more value than he has right now unless he becomes, you know, an all-star player. And I think they probably don't see him as that. You add in Saar, Kuzma still here for now, Corey Kispert, Bilal Koulibaly. We'll see what they do with these other picks. They've got 2 more in the first round. And you're also talking about a minute situation. And there's a log jam. So at the end of the day, you get, I know the 14th pick in this draft is not as exciting as a potential lottery pick next year. Would have definitely preferred to have that for sure. But 2 firsts and 2 seconds for a guy who you just don't really have a place
and
for
Brogdon
in the long term is not, yeah, and Brogdon, who could turn into more picks or is a good bet. He's on an expiring deal. You can flip him at the trade deadline. We'll see. Like, that's not a bad deal.
What does the rest of the offseason look like? You brought up Kuzma's on the roster for now. Free agency obviously begins Sunday. I don't know, you know, how aggressive the Wizards are going to be. What do you think the moves are for them the rest of the way now?
I mean, the biggest decision they have to make is Tyus Jones. Do they try to make an offer to re-sign him? I know that Tyus really liked being here, like, even though they didn't win a lot, but, like, the atmosphere and kind of the player development stuff and what they're building here, players have really, really high grade on, even if it's going to take a while to actually be seen in the win column. But he's also getting, you know, closer to 30. He wants to win. So does he take an offer from the Wizards and say, hey, I'll do you a solid because I like you, and maybe even it's a little more money, as we know teams can sign incumbent players for more, and a side and trade. So that's the biggest thing they have to figure out is what they do with Tyus Jones. And then I think, really, it's what they do the rest of this draft, because I don't expect them to do a whole lot in free agency other than fill pieces. They have some younger guys that they like that I think they want to find more minutes. I think they have some guys in their G League team that they kind of like and want to see where they're at. But also, I mean, David Aldridge is in the Hall of Fame for a reason as a journalist, and he tweeted out this earlier, so I will give DA his credit, and we should all just listen to DA. Everyone wants to suck this year. The 2025 draft is awesome. So what do they want to do in free agency? Get enough guys who are going to come in here, fill some minutes, not be bad locker room guys, maybe even their good vets to help, you know, mentor these younger guys and be terrible so that next year they can go and play capture the flag. That's what they want to do, because they still, unless Saar turns into something that we don't expect him to, they still don't have their, like, Victor Wembanyama type centerpiece. Not that anyone's Wemby, but they don't have that centerpiece. And next year or 26 is the year that they get it. so they want to suck.
It's about time the Wizards finally realized a real, true break-it-down rebuild is the only way to go, as opposed to giving Bradley Beal max contract after max contract after max contract. Craig Hoffman, the Team 980, thanks for jumping on with us, buddy.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
Third up is Brandon Scott, co-host of the Rockets podcast, H-Town Hoops. Brandon gave his opinion on the Rockets' third pick and what it means for the guard position, which is a logjam now in Houston. He gives us some great insight, so let's get into it.
We bring on Brandon Scott, co-host of H-Town Hoops, and I guess at least short term, Reed Sheppard, what does his role look like in this this Rockets lineup? Obviously, there could be some trades. There could be some other things they do this offseason.
Well, in terms of his role, I'm not exactly sure how many minutes he's going to play, but he fills an obvious need for the Rockets. This is the most sensible pick that they could have made. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm a little bit surprised that they made it. If I had been a betting man going into this draft, I would have bet that they were going to draft Donovan Clingan, and that eventually, you know, they were going to trade Alperen Şengün and that'd be their succession plan at center. But this goes in a totally different direction. With Reed Sheppard, it feels an obvious need. The Rockets were bottom 7 or 8 in three-point shooting last year. And as we know, Reed Sheppard is a knockdown shooter, widely considered the best shooter in this draft, 52% from three this year. So it feels an obvious need. I don't know exactly how many minutes he'll play and where he'll fit in the rotation, but he'll absolutely have a role on the team because they need him. They don't have a lot of guys that can knock down shots, and so he's going to fill an immediate and obvious need for him.
So I'm curious, though, in terms of like this roster, there's just a lot of guards, Brandon. What are we doing? Like, where's Jalen Green going to be? Like, Fred VanVleet obviously is there. So you have another undersized guard to pair with Fred VanVleet. Just your thoughts on, like, what this means for the offseason and the future for this roster.
Yeah, they definitely have some tough decisions to make, Trista. Like, I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, you saw earlier in the day the reports of them trading for control of the Phoenix Suns pick. So basically relinquishing control of the Nets picks so they can now have control of the Suns pick and or picks, and they're betting on the failure, the demise of the Phoenix Suns, whether that means dangling those picks in front of Phoenix to get, say, a Kevin Durant or a Devin Booker, or saying, okay, Phoenix, you guys actually believe in this? Guess what? Nobody else in the NBA does. Everyone else sees the writing on the wall over in Phoenix. We're going to go shop this elsewhere, and we'll find our star one way or another, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, whether it's Jimmy Butler. I mean, you name your favorite star that you could see leaving that team, and now Houston has essentially doubled up its ammo to go out and get that player. So I would acknowledge your point that it's kind of a crowded roster that's kind of confusing to figure out exactly what it is that they're doing right now. But I do think that there are larger plays at hand here. And a lot of that was laid out for you earlier in the day with them doubling up on their ammo to go out there and get another or actually find a bona fide star. They've got a bunch of pieces. The thing that they haven't answered, the question that the Rockets have not answered yet, is whether they've got a guy to build around and who that guy is. They're hopeful, and we can hope traffic as much as we want, that Jalen Green will be that guy, or maybe Alperen Şengün, which you saw from him, which was really encouraging. Maybe he's that guy. But I don't get the sense that they believe, and I would tend to agree with them, that there is a guy that has established themselves as a bona fide player to build around. So they're still trying to figure that piece out. Reed Sheppard, even though he's the number three overall pick, and traditionally we think of a guy that's picked in that spot as being like a somebody that you're building around, that's still going to be ultimately a piece around the larger puzzle that they're trying to put together.
So what's the timetable for this team to compete? Because like you said, I mean, right now you're trying to figure out who could play, maybe some trade pieces, and they're trying to land a star. Is there like a timetable, like in the next year or two, that this team could maybe win a playoff series?
Yeah, no, I think that's the exciting part about it, is that we're kind of past timetables. Like, they've done the timetable, let's develop young guys thing. They got six guys on the roster now that were first round picks over the last 3 years. And then they hire Ime Udoka, who is a win now type of guy. Like, we understand why he's not in Boston anymore, but otherwise, and then you add to that the backdrop of Boston winning the finals, and like, this is a guy who's got a little sense of urgency here. Like, he's not, Ime Udoka is not here to just like let's develop young talent and accumulate picks and see what we got. Like, they've done that already. When we talk about accumulating assets and picks now, it is solely now as ammo. And speaking to your timeline question, they are in right now, win right now mode. Hey, maybe one of these guys develops. They're able to extend Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün, and that's all well and good. But like I mentioned earlier, they're trying to find a bona fide, established guy that they're building this team around. And the timeline, to answer your question, is right now, today.
Brandon Scott, co-host of H-Town Hoops with a team in the Rockets.
Love betting them the second half.
They are trending up, I'll tell you. I really appreciate you coming on with us. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
We then have a couple of bonus episodes, so thank you so much for joining us. The first is with the great Ian Begley of SNY, who gives us his opinion on the Knicks trading for Mikal Bridges and signing OG Anunoby. What does that mean for Isaiah Hartenstein, a.k.a. iHeart? Fascinating stuff. Let's get into it.
Ian Begley jumping on with us. He covers the Knicks and the Nets for SNY in a busy, busy 24 hours, so we're not going to waste any time and get right to him. We saw you tweeting last night after the Mikal Bridges trade that the Knicks were likely still going to try their best to get OG Anunoby, and sure enough, less than 24 hours later, OG Anunoby will sign a five-year, $212 million deal with the Knicks. At this point now, when we look at this team, what's the rest of the offseason going to look like for them?
You know, they're going to try on Isaiah Hartenstein. They would love to get Isaiah Hartenstein back. The thing is, it's a salary crunch at this point. Knicks could be hard capped at a certain number for team salary if the Bridges trade goes through a certain way. And they can only offer Hartenstein $16 million a year starting salary. Other teams are expected to come over the top there and make Hartenstein big offers. So it's going to be tough to retain him. And then I think you're looking at they're going to continue to take a look at the trade market, but also they have to shed some salary here because of the Mikal Bridges trade. So I wonder if they try to do that by trading one of their firsts this draft, because then you can shed some salary. Maybe you kick it to a future draft. Those are the things that are currently on the agenda for New York.
If they can't re-sign Hartenstein, what would be a reasonable outcome for a backup big? Would that be like an Andre Drummond? Would that be trying to find a young guy? Or just rolling out with Precious Achiuwa as the backup?
Yeah, I think you're looking at Drummond as an option. You're looking... Precious Achiuwa would be tough to bring back because of the financial issues. But I think you're looking at maybe Nick Richards, who's under contract in Charlotte. You're looking at Goga Bitaz down in Orlando as a potential option. Omer, you're at 7 in Utah. I think there are some bigs that the Knicks have discussed on their radar if they do have to pivot on Hartenstein and bring somebody behind Mitchell Robinson.
Is there any chance that they move Julius Randle? And if not, what do you see his role being? I know, you know, he's approaching his 30th. He's going to be 30 years old, and they got 1 year left, I believe, of control on him.
You know, I never say never, right? Only if you're talking about a Jalen Brunson trade would I say never with the Knicks. So I never say never on any other player. And, you know, with Randle, I think that he was so good for them last January when everybody was healthy after the OG Anunoby trade. They went 12-2. They started out 12-2 in January, and Randle was a huge part of that before he got hurt, before he hurt his shoulder. So I don't necessarily look at it as you need to get rid of Randle. He's been so valuable for this organization. The thing that I wonder is there enough to go around if you have Bridges, you have Anunoby, you have Brunson, DiVincenzo, Hart, and so is there enough for Randle there? I that's the thing I wonder about. I don't know what the Knicks are thinking in terms of how it's all going to work, but there's only so many shots to go around.
Talking to Ian Begley, BetMGM tonight. Is it more likely the Knicks keep both of those picks tonight in the draft, or could you see them moving up or moving out? I mean, I feel like this draft just has so many more variables in it.
Yeah, a ton of variables, especially when you're at 24, 25. So much can happen ahead of you. I do think that they trade at least one of those firsts, maybe for future seconds or a second this year, because that, again, knocks some money off their team salary if they are hard capped at that first apron, which I'm sorry, this is probably putting people to sleep, but it gives them some more money to spend in free agency to fill out the roster. You have Ananobi back on that deal that's going to start, I think, in the high 30s. And so they only have a few million to spend, really, and unless they can get through the trade another way and not be hard capped. So I think you're looking at the picks. You're looking at them trading at least one tonight.
Just going back to OG, how do you think the Knicks are going to use OG now that they've backed up the Brinks truck for him? Because he's not been shy about wanting a larger offensive role, and teams like Orlando were suitors for him. And like you said, there's just not a lot of ball to go around, and there's a lot of players with mouths to feed.
Yeah, you know, I think Ananobi's role is not going to change much from what it was last season. And so Nick's going to rely on him defensively to take on the opposing wing, the top scorer on the other team. And then he's going to get baskets off of his cutting. He's going to get baskets from behind the arc. And he showed in the playoffs before he got hurt that he can get some separation off the dribble, create room for himself and knock a shot down. So maybe you see more of that this coming season. But yeah, again, Chris, you said it. I don't know how you do the shot allotment on this group. It's going to take some sacrifice from guys. Are they comfortable with that? I mean, we'll find out. But Nick's doing everything that they've wanted to do and more so far this offseason by getting Bridges and re-signing Ananobi.
Before we let you go, the Nets, their plan, are we expecting kind of a long rebuild? Is this going to be just stockpiling as many picks as they can over the next couple of seasons?
Look, yeah, they're clearly building through the draft here. I think they have 16 firsts through 2031, and so they have plenty of leeway to get stuff done through the draft. And also, they're going to have a lot of cap space in 2025, so I think they're going to go slow, but then if there's an opportunity that presents itself in that free agency, they'd be aggressive. But it seems like it's back to square one for Sean Marks and the Nets. And, you know, he's been through a lot in Brooklyn, building that thing up. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving era, aftermath of that, and now he's getting to start over again with another new head coach. So they have a clear direction now. I think they have a clear vision for the future, and that's always a good thing for an NBA organization.
Ian, I know you've had a super busy 24 hours, and it's only going to continue to be busy tonight. Really appreciate you squeezing us in. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime, guys. Have a great night.
Finally, as a true bonus for the hoops heads out there, let's put in an interview that we just did last night with the great Jim Boeheim, Hall of Fame and national championship winning coach at Syracuse. Be warned, a man Jim Boeheim probably has like a Motorola Razr, so the audio on his phone was not great. What is it about these older men and the like connections of the interviews? It's passable. It's interesting, so you should give it a listen. Let's speed up.
Would talk to players when they would get ready for, you know, the NBA draft this time of year and what to expect and what the process was going to be like and just what would be the advice that you would give players today and tonight as they're getting ready to get into the first round of the NFL draft, Coach?
Well, the whole thing with, you know, players, they kind of make up their mind what they're going to do usually. I remember Jeremy Grant, I didn't think he was ready, and he probably wasn't, but he went in and got drafted late by the Philadelphia 76ers, and he wasn't ready to play in the NBA, but they didn't have any players. They were going through the great experiment or whatever they called it, and he got to play 2 years with them, and then he developed himself into a player. Now he's a $160 million player. So it's hard to give advice to players because you're not sure if the guy's not a top 4 or 5 pick. And into this year's draft, you really can't tell who's what pick because there doesn't seem to be anybody that's going to make a big difference in their first year, 2, maybe even 3 years in the draft. And I think that's one reason you might see some more trades than usual early, because people aren't going to count on the draft for much this year.
Coach, there's a lot of differing opinions on Rob Dillingham. Some people love him. Some evaluators say maybe his lack of size and his turnover-prone behavior that would make them reticent to take him. I'd love to get your take on Rob Dillingham and how you think he's going to translate to the pros.
Well, if you're not absolute standout college guard, you're going to struggle in the NBA. Because you go in the NBA, who are you going to, what team you playing? The Knicks got Brunson, you know, the Warriors, obviously, you know, you got Minnesota, you know, you get Edwards and those guys. I mean, he might be a good prospect, but it might take a couple years, 3 years for a guy like that. The same thing with all these kids. I mean, Castle at Connecticut's a good player, but it might be 2-3 years away. I think they're looking at the European guys because, well, they're bigger and they're long and maybe they have potential, but they're not ready to play in the NBA with their physicality right now. But the draft, I mean, all these guards coming to the NBA have a rude awakening unless you're a great player. You have a rude awakening.
What do you think is the biggest issue or bugaboo that these guards need to figure out to problem solve in order to acclimate to the next level?
Well, they're basically, they're not as good as the guards that are up there were in college, and those guys have been up there for 5 years or 8 years or 10 years. So it's just getting stronger. In some cases, they got to shoot better. In some cases, they got to develop their ball handling. In some cases, their defense. And, you know, but there's a big difference between being a prospect, which all these guards are, Shepherd, Dillingham, you know, Castle. They're all good prospects, but they're not guys that are going to play a lot in the NBA for a while. I mean, the NBA, I think sometimes people forget how good those players are. And if you're going up there as a pretty good college player, prospect, you're not playing right away in the NBA, I don't think.
Yeah, and Coach, like you said, all these guys are prospects. Probably nobody makes a huge difference year one or year two, but who has the highest ceiling? Who's your favorite player in this draft? Maybe could end up being an all-star.
Well, I think the two foreign players from France who got great potential, they got size, they can shoot it, they play in a good league. I think they have potential. I think the guards, Rich Shepherd, Castle, Dillingham, I think they all have potential to be good players. There's nobody that you look at and say, wow, that guy's going to be a great pro. And you look some of the trades that are going to trade with the Knicks. I mean, they must want like 5 wings down there because they're going to have all the wings. I know you need wings to defend the Celtics, but now they got a plethora of wings. And if they lose Hartenstein and Robinson gets hurt all the time, what are they going to do? Play Julius Randle at center? I guess. I don't know.
Talking to Jim Boeheim, BetMGM tonight. When we look at this draft, obviously, it's well known, and you've said it a bunch in terms of these prospects. It's going to take some time for a lot of them to develop. And also, a lot of international prospects versus, you know, even in the past now. What does that just say about the growth of the game internationally to have so many looked at as first-round picks?
Well, if you look at the NBA internationally, the top 4 or 5 players in the NBA before this season, you know, were all foreign players. You know, Jokic, Doncic, Giannis, they're all Embiid. They're all basically, although Embiid's playing with the national team now. But, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but I think it's 20-25% of the NBA is foreign players right now. And I think that's going to grow probably. And I think 20 years down the road, Africa is going to have a huge impact on the NBA. They're just getting started over there. I mean, they have clinics in towns where they don't even have a court, and there's like 10 7-footers show up to play. I mean, it's a little ways away. I mean, there's still a lot of Africans getting here, going to Europe and then coming over. But I think someday they're going to be a dominant force in the NBA, particularly at the big position. So, you know, but there's going to be a couple players in this draft this year that are going to surprise people and be really, there could be 7 or 8 really good NBA players, just not now. It's going to take 2 or 3 years for them to get there, and some of them are going to get there. It's just, it's tricky, to pick which one, and drafting is a little bit of a guessing game. I mean, Klay Thompson went 14th, and Steph Curry went whatever after a couple other guards. And so it is a little bit of a guessing game. But some of these guys this year will be good players. The guys we're talking about certainly someday will be good NBA players.
Coach, we're watching highlights right now on the TV of Reed Sheppard, one of the best shooters in college basketball history, 51% from three, I think, has hops. But he is only 6'1", tough defender. He's consensus top three pick right now, at least in terms of analysis. Is that shocking considering his size? And like, do you think he can make an impact eventually at the next level?
Well, in the NBA, I think this might not be right, but somebody told me there were three guards under 6'3". Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I think, and all three of them are point guards, I think, too.
Yeah.
So how many 6'1 shooting guards are there in the NBA? Tough. He's got to go up against 6'5", 6'6 guys every time he plays. And the other thing with the NBA, there's some teams that will, like, for example, Miami Heat, they get shots for guards. They run them off screens. They do stuff like that. But a lot of NBA teams don't do that. They play a different style, and if there's a double team, a guy like Sheppard might get an open shot. But they don't run a lot of screens, and a guy like him obviously needs some of that. And but he is a good shooter. You know, if he was 6'5", 6'6", he'd be a huge prospect. You know, he'd be definitely a top pick. But 6'1", I mean, the odds are stacked against you. In the NBA, you get isolated pretty quick. You're 6'1", and you're playing, they're going to come right at you with a 6'5 guy and isolate you a lot and take advantage of you. It's tough with his size, but he does shoot it at a high level, and he's athletic. So, again, it's a little bit of a guessing game there.
And, Coach, you need shooters in the NBA, so even if none of these guys are stars, the other thing you need, rim protectors. What do you like about Zach Edey's skill set and then Donovan Klingon's skill set, the two probably the best bigs outside of the foreign guys?
The thing that impressed me most of the NBA playoffs last year was Hartenstein with New York.
Yeah.
All he did was screen, roll, catch it, and put it in, and rebound. And when he rebounded, he'd throw it out to the three. I thought he was great, and I would really, if I was a Knick, had anything to do with the Knicks, I would want to keep that guy on the team. I would really want to keep that guy. However, I had to do it. Brunson and all those guys, Dante, they need screens. They need somebody screening for them, get open, get in the lane to make plays. And he's a great role guy. He rolls to the basket and catches. He's got that little shot. But I think Edey could be like that. I think Klingon could be like that. So Hartenstein kind of proved that you could be that old-fashioned center. Not to throw the ball to, but to pick, roll, go to the basket. And they're, Klingon's athletic. Edey's, I think, shown some real strides this last year. I would be high on those two guys. I would, in this draft, if you use them the right way, I think they could be very, very effective players.
Talking to Jim Boeheim, BetMGM tonight. Dalton Knecht had himself a monster year this past season at Tennessee. And obviously, yeah, when we're talking, you talk a lot about the size and some of the smaller guards we have. He's got a little bit more of that prototypical NBA size, 6'5", 6'6", about, 215 or so, can shoot. Yep. Does he kind of look like a player to you that you feel like could have a little bit of a higher ceiling in the NBA, just given, one, his experience, but, two, the size and the skill set that's there, too?
Yeah, I mean, I like him as a scorer. I haven't seen him up close, so it's hard to evaluate. Mm-hmm. He's not a guard. He's a small forward, right? Really? And yeah. 6'6 is small. Mm-hmm. Small forward. But to me, he looks like a guy that can play in the NBA, just from watching what I've seen. I think he's a guy that can play in the NBA because he can score. And he's a tough kid. He's, he can put it on the floor a little bit. I like him. I like his potential more to play right away in the right situation. he might be able to play quicker than somebody who may be better long range down the road.
Is it just me?
That's why, you know, these general manager jobs are hard in the NBA because you got to.
Yeah.
In this year's draft, I mean, somebody's going to look smart because somebody picked about 10th or 11th or whatever is going to be really good.
That's true.
Coach, do you think the tough Big East schedule helps prepare guys like Klingon, Devin Carter, Tyler Kolek to acclimate to the next level faster? Or do you think that the conference that you play in isn't nearly as relevant as maybe I think?
I don't think it's that relevant. I think Danny Hurley pushes his players. I think he's a really tremendous college coach. Obviously, he's the premier college coach. I'm glad he didn't go to the Lakers. I think it would have been hard. I'd like to see him at practice with LeBron and Anthony Davis when they said, "I don't feel like it today." It reminds me of the greatest thing I ever saw. Larry Brown's one of the greatest coaches I've ever seen. And I went to the Philadelphia practice when Allen Iverson was either first year with Larry, I think, and he did it something, and Allen drove in there and did something, and Larry blew his whistle and says, "Yeah, Allen, you can't do that." And he looked at him, and the next play, Allen did the same thing. And then he did the same thing again. You know, I mean, some guys, you just got to go to change. And I think it would have been a real challenge for that to work with that particular team. But it would have been interesting. But I think he did the right thing going back. He's a great college coach. And he's got it going. And, you know, Mike Krzyzewski is the smartest guy I've ever known in college basketball. And he turned down the NBA a couple times and stayed with Duke, which I think turned out pretty good for him.
Yeah, just no question. It definitely did. And yeah, Dan Hurley creating something big up there at UConn without question. Jim Boeheim, really great to have you on. We really appreciate you giving us the time, getting us ready for the draft tonight, Coach.
Well, good luck, and I'm sure those NBA guys will have their opinion who's going to be great. But I'm not sure, but I'm just a retired college coach, so I'm sure they know more than...
Hey, Coach, we love getting your insight before this. You made us smarter. There he is,
for sure.
Coach Jim Boeheim. That was awesome to have him on there.
That's all the time that we have for this episode of the Heat Check. Check out, and thanks to all of our guests and the whole BetMGM crew. Come back. Really, Friday. I did say I was going to do an episode on Friday, but I had so much I wanted to give it to you. Breaking down both days of the draft, and check out the feed. Check out the feed for past episodes and mini episodes which drop unexpectedly, like Dalton Connect in today's draft. Do not forget to follow the Heat Check throughout free agency. That means download, subscribe. That means tell your friends. Even that weirdo in the Lincoln Navigator who accused you of parking too close despite her being 1 inch from the separation line and then threatening to... have you thrown in jail? That's some crazy stuff. Tell her, hey, yo, bitch, if you can't handle a big car, don't drive one. Maybe get a Prius. Cool down your Karen vibes and throw on the Heat Check with Trista. It's fun. And don't forget to follow us at this Heat Check and at Trista Crick on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And at some point, YouTube!